Good morning, you may be seated. Justice Lanzinger will not be here this morning. Her mother passed away over the weekend, but she's read the briefs. She'll observe the taped oral arguments, and she will be participating in the decisions in all the cases we hear today. First case is 04-2159, Mahoning County Bar Association and the District Counsel versus Mark Lavelle. Ms. Brown.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Lori Brown. I am here today on behalf of the Disciplinary Council and the Mahoning County Bar Association, co-relators in the case against Mark Lavelle. I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please. First of all, I'd like to talk about count one of this complaint, which is the glorious short grievance against Mr. Lavelle. The Board of Commissioners on Grievances and Discipline found that Mr. Lavelle violated 6101A3 in that he neglected Gloria Short's case. The Mahoning County Bar Association has objected to the board's failure to find that Mr. Lavelle did not cooperate in the investigation and that he misrepresented information to the investigator, Rick Bush, during the course of the Bar Association's investigation. With regard to the violation of the rule that requires attorneys and judges to assist in an investigation, GovBar Rule 5, Section 4G, relator submits that that rule requires affirmative action on behalf of the respondent. It is not enough to merely sit back and expect the investigator to find out all the facts and all the details. The rule requires the attorney to actively participate. First of all, in the investigation conducted by the Bar Association, Mr. Lavelle received 4 letters from the Bar Association. He received the first letter in May of 2003, the second letter in June, the third letter in July, the fourth letter in August. The fourth letter was dated August 5th. It was not until August 18th that Mr. Lavelle even contacted the investigator. During that period of time, Mr. Lavelle lost his file on Gloria Short. He did not speak to his employees regarding what might have happened to his case. The facts got stale. The information that he gave to the investigator ultimately turned out to be blatantly false. However, if Mr. Lavelle had in fact looked to see what the situation was in May when he got the first letter, it's entirely possible that we would know today what actually happened to the Gloria Short case. The information that Mr. Lavelle gave to Rick Bush during his interview and in his letter to the Bar Association, which is Relator's Exhibit Number 7, the information he gave was blatantly false. First of all, he told Mr. Bush that there was a hearing scheduled in the Short matter for May 8th, 2003. There was never a hearing scheduled in the Short matter. He also told Mr. Bush in his letter that the hearing had been rescheduled. The court had rescheduled the hearing. There was no hearing ever to reschedule, so that it couldn't have been rescheduled. Mr. Lavelle also told Mr. Bush that he had taken the petition to the courthouse. He had given it to a woman named Christine Laurent, who was the assignment commissioner in the courthouse, and that it had been lost somewhere between the second floor and the fourth floors of the courthouse. That never happened. In addition, he told Mr. Bush that he was waiting for some documents from Mrs. Short, a deed perhaps, that he was waiting for the legal description of her property. Then, first he told him that he had received it in May. He then changed his story to say that he had received it in March. Neither story is true. Gloria Short testified, that she never gave Mr. Lavelle any documents after the first time she met with him, which was in October of 2002. So the information that Mr. Lavelle gave to Rick Bush during his interview and in his written response was blatantly false. Mr. Lavelle violated GovBar Rule 5, Section 4G, and DR 1102A4, in addition to neglecting Mrs. Short's case with regard to count one of the formal complaint. With regard to count two, this is the grievance that was filed by Lori Cozart against Mark Lavelle. Lori Cozart got involved in this matter because she and her husband, Brian Cupp, desired a dissolution. There is no question that Mr. Cupp was Mark Lavelle's client. Lori Cozart was not his client. The board makes quite a deal, if you will, about the fact that Lori Cozart was not Mark Lavelle's client. In this situation, that does not matter. Mark Lavelle nevertheless had a duty to supervise his employees to make sure that individuals with whom they were communicating received true and accurate information. The failure to supervise his employees, particularly Pamela Rodriguez and Gregory Lavelle, with regard to the Cozart matter, resulted in at least 5 documents where there were false notary seals, 6 documents where Pamela Rodriguez used whiteout to change the dates after they had been signed by either Lori Cozart or Brian Cupp, and in addition, there were 2 forgeries of respondents' names on notaries that appeared in Cupp versus Cupp dissolution documents. Lori Cozart went to Mark Lavelle's office seeking assistance when she was trying to refinance her property. She talked to Pamela Rodriguez on the telephone. Ms. Rodriguez gave her false information. She told her a hearing had been scheduled for April 9th, 2003. She then faxed documents to an individual by the name of Joe Farah, and those are documents that are contained in co-relators exhibits 1 through 9, I believe it is. When you take a look at those documents, you will find that they are so incredibly hard to believe that it's quite shocking. She created documents that tended to prove that the Cupp versus Cupp dissolution had actually been filed. It was never filed. Respondents stipulated that it was never filed. Yet Pamela Rodriguez created documents to make it appear to Lori Cozart, Joe Farah, and Andy Basil that it had in fact been filed. Where does the respondent fit in here? He fits in because he had a duty to supervise Pamela Rodriguez. Certainly not 24 hours a day, and we're not suggesting that. He nevertheless had a duty to supervise her to the point which she was not communicating false information. By his own testimony, respondent has about 200 active cases right now. He's in court 5 to 6 hours a day. The respondent should know that his staff, including Pamela Rodriguez, was communicating on a regular basis with clients and third parties. He had some duty under the rules to make sure that she was doing her job appropriately and communicating truthful information. He did not do that. His failure to do that is neglect, a violation of 6101A3. In this situation, because it resulted in false and forged documents, it violated DR1102A5 and DR1102A6. Mr. Lavelle also failed to cooperate with co-relator disciplinary counsel's investigation, just as he did with the Mahoning County Bar Association. In the disciplinary counsel's situation, a letter of inquiry was sent to Mr. Lavelle in May, again, of 2003. He did not respond. A second letter of inquiry was sent to Mr. Lavelle in June of 2003. Toward the end of June, he contacted the Office of Disciplinary Counsel and asked for an extension of time to respond. That extension was granted. He did not respond within the time allowed under the extension granted by the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. Ultimately, the office issued a subpoena to compel his attendance at the office for a deposition. He did appear, and that was in September of 2003. One place in which the board's report is erroneous with regard to that deposition, and it's pointed out in our brief, is that the board assumed that that deposition was taken in both the Mahoning County Bar Association case and disciplinary counsel. That's not correct. The deposition was taken only in disciplinary counsel's case. He never gave a deposition in the Bar Association's case until after the matter was certified with probable cause.
Ms. Brownkin, you tell us, I can't tell from the briefs, it seems as if the respondent had very little contact with the clients. Is that accurate? There's apparently one telephone call that apparently he was on the phone. What can you quantify that for me?
There's a discrepancy in the testimony, if you will, Your Honor. Gloria Short testified that she, from October of 2002, when she first met with respondent, until May of 2003, that she never talked to the respondent. She testified that she left messages in the office, she left messages on his cell phone, she testified that he never responded to her calls. She did, Gloria Short did, talk to Pamela Rodriguez and Greg Lavelle. The respondent testified that he did, in fact, return some of Gloria Short's phone calls and made sure that her needs were met, that her questions were answered. He also testified that he asked her for the deed a couple of times after he met with her in October. Lori Cozart, when she telephoned the office, talked to Pamela Rodriguez, Greg Laval, and respondent, hence his duty to be truthful and to provide truthful information. The problem with the communication, again, Andy Basil and Joe Farah called respondent's office and left messages for respondent. And there is no question those messages were never even given to respondent. He did not get the messages. He did not return the calls.
The panel that that made the recommendation here of 6 months stayed recommends with counseling and monitoring. What sort of counseling? Do you know? Is there any more specific in the record?
Not psychological counseling, Your Honor. I believe that they are more focused on law office management. The respondent was not very good, and quite frankly, it didn't exist. It doesn't exist in the record. At checking his files. In other words, the first time he knew there was a problem with the short file was in early May when he looked at his calendar of 2003. He looked at his calendar and saw that he had a hearing date for May 8th of 2003 on his calendar in Pamela's handwriting. At that point, he realized that there was no hearing. It hadn't been filed. Yet in his testimony, he's talking to Gloria Short this whole time. He should be looking at his file to find out, has the petition been filed? Does he have all the documents he needs? What's the case number? You know, what comes up next? He wasn't doing any of that. He testified in addition that the cup versus cup file, for example, the documents that were whited out by Pamela Rodriguez in her testimony December 10th of 2002, he never saw those. You know, in terms of law office management, I believe the board intended for someone to sit down and go through his daily schedule or weekly schedule with him to find out what he's doing for his clients. I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Counsel, your recommendation is 18 months, 12 stayed?
That's correct, Your Honor. And 6 months actual suspension.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Giannini.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justices. I'm here on behalf of the respondent, Mark Laval. I'm Matthew Giannini. As we sit forth, and it was the facts were represented by counsel for the Bar Association, they are substantially accurate in the presentation. And we want to first acknowledge two facts. One, that my client acknowledges and agrees to the findings as set forth by the board, and as a result, we have not filed an appeal to those findings. Also, that my client was remiss in the initial investigation. There is no doubt that he should have responded earlier and sooner to the request. Both
counsel, what was the motivation for literally ignoring or blowing off the inquiries?
Initially, Your Honor, it's a question of the constraints of his practice, being in court, the problem that he could not locate the file whatsoever on Gloria Short. It had been missing. He could not find it. He did, according to his testimony during his deposition, make contacts at least and indicated that he had called and asked for additional time, though he did not submit it in writing. And in the case with disciplinary counsel, he did contact and make a request for an extension. In addition to that, there was a pending matter with them involving a criminal case, and that matter was being resolved, and he wanted to be resolved.
So basically, you're offering the justification of too heavy of a workload in order to respond to the disciplinary action here.
I'm not in any way defending what my client did. We say that he was wrong in what he did. He should have taken more affirmative action. He should have written, asked for additional time. As for an excuse, as far as a sole practitioner, when you are running your own practice at times in which you're in active caseload, both in criminal and in domestic relations, the time gets away. And he's also certified on the death penalty cases of which he had been involved with one at approximately that time. As set forth, we acknowledge those faults. As I said, Mr. Laval has been in practice for approximately 11 years. He is a sole practitioner. He has an active trial practice, as indicated between the domestic relations court and the criminal branch of the Common Pleas Court. He is in trial approximately 5 to 6 hours a day, 5 days a week, and works both on Saturdays and Sundays in his office. The ability to supervise one staff when you are in court is extremely difficult, if not impossible, when messages are not being granted to you or being written for you or that you are being advised. All you know is when you come back are the messages that are left there for you, any written communications from any of your clients.
Does a client who has, as a lawyer, someone who practices solo, has chosen to practice solo, should that client expect that his or her contact with the lawyer should be less than, or that the standard of conduct by that lawyer should be less than a lawyer who practices with a group?
I don't think the standard would be any different, Your Honor, as far as when it's set up. I believe that you have a duty to represent to your clients, the availability to respond to their calls, to be in the office at times when they are going to be, in fact, contacting you and making alternative attempts to contact them, either in the evening hours or on weekends or on holidays, to return their call, provide them with faxes, mail, or in this day and age with the case of emails. I believe you have to notify. However, having said that and being actively involved in a domestic relations practice, the calls are endless. They are constantly calling 3, 4, 5 times a day, and every call comes in. It is impossible to return every call when you're in court and to take care of the needs of every client that calls in on a daily basis.
Well, I understand that, but does not the lawyer then have maybe not a higher standard, but the lawyer certainly has a standard, as we said in Ball and as ABA rules have said, or advisory opinions have said, is that a lawyer has a responsibility to supervise the staff, the office staff, in a manner that is consistent with the code of professional responsibility. Here there seems to be a gap, doesn't there?
I would concur wholeheartedly, and there may be a gap, Your Honor. However, I believe the problem comes in if you're aware of the calls coming in. If your staff does not take the messages or advise you, you have a problem. You cannot just go look for a file and anticipate that someone has contacted you in that day, especially if they haven't written or they've left follow-up messages. It begs the question, when the secretary intercepts messages or mail and does not provide it to you, if it doesn't come to your desk, you're unaware of what is actually happening. And what comes in at many times, and especially in this case, if you're not there to know when the calls are coming in and the messages are not left, it is impossible to know. I believe this matter is compounded, at least in the first count, because the file was missed. The file was gone. No one has been able to file the file to this day.
But it seemed to me that your client had some red flags, had he been supervising at all, that would have alerted him to those. Missing files, dates on his calendars without actual matching court dates, documents that have been altered and changed. If he had been paying attention at even a minimum and looking through his files, certainly he would have picked up red flags that raised some problems with his staff, would he not?
Taking in the second case, the Cosard Cup case, Your Honor, what the problem arose on that, the gentleman who had retained him had never paid the retainer. Ms. Cup was advised that he would not be going forward with the case. As a result, since no money was coming in, he did not have a reason to investigate his file to check. He was waiting. The gentleman had not come in after 4 to 5 months. As a result, it's just basically staying in an open file, waiting for the gentleman to fulfill his obligation as Mr. Lavelle's client.
So you're saying that his secretary went ahead and did all this work, allegedly, even though there was, in his mind, no file opened?
This was the second file. The first file was missing. This is the second file. File had been opened. Ms. Cosard Cup came in during the summer and signed the documents. Mr. Cup came in afterwards and signed documents but never paid the retainer. He was put on notice and there's no dispute, nor was there any testimony offered by him that he did not know that the case was not going to be filed until he paid the retainer for the dissolution.
Then why would the secretary go ahead and do all this work if that was the case?
I believe the board addressed it and had great fault with the secretary as to her taking on functions, doing things, whiting out items, notarizing items on her own when she is not a notary, that they had found great fault and placed it at the foot of this individual who, without a basis or reason, did these actions, as was indicated by counsel, created documents that had filed at the Mahoning County Clerk of Court's office that were never filed in the case, even before Mr. Cupp had signed them. So we don't know what her motivation was. She testified. The board found a great deal of problem with her credibility, and in fact found no credibility with her. They believed the intent of Mr. Lavelle that he was unaware in the Cozart Cup matter of any of these transactions of faxes going back and forth to allow Ms. Cozart Cup to be able to refinance. As we deal with the initial case, the testimony came in and that Mr. Lavelle testified that it is the requirement, and the board found to be credible, that there are certain requirements in the Mahoning County Domestic Relations Court that must be fulfilled before a dissolution can be completed, and that is the providing of a legal description. Generally, it is the policy that the legal description must be there on the date that the petition is filed and the entry is brought to the court on the day of which the hearing is set forth the dissolution. Mr. Lavelle had advised his client on a number of occasions that he needed that legal description, indicated to her that he would be able to obtain that legal description, but it would be at a cost to her because he would have to contact a title company to get it. There was difference of opinions between the two Shorts as to who was going to get it. It was never, in fact, obtained. It could not be filed and completed at that time. Mr. Lavelle has indicated during his testimony and the dealings with the parties that when knowledge was presented, he attempted to complete what was required of him. He had couched in his time of investigation and during his deposition with the Mahoning County Bar Association, he could not remember what had occurred in the Short case. Without a file, he tried to recollect it to the best of his ability, he couched it, he believes this is what happened, and that is where his error. And again, he was in error. He represented to the panel that this is what he believed had happened, that he attempted to file the dissolution, and he did not, in fact, was able to file it. He thought it was lost somewhere between the second floor of the clerk's office and the fourth floor of the domestic relations court. That was in error. When he finally started piecing the matter together, sometimes afterwards, then he realized he had never filed it and the basis for not filing it. And he had offered at all times to Ms. Short, who he had never charged in this matter, that he would refile it for her at no cost to her. She elected to go elsewhere, use other counsel, as may be expected. However, they used his pleadings, his separation agreement that was prepared and executed by the parties in actually obtaining the dissolution. There was no loss, there was no damage to Ms. Short in the matter. In the Cupp case, again, as was pointed out, she was not Mr. Lavelle's client. She did not suffer any damage as a result of Mr. Lavelle's action. She in no way was injured in any fashion whatsoever. At all times, she could have obtained counsel. She could have proceeded with a contested divorce or attempted to have her attorney contact Mr. Lavelle to put forth the dissolution papers, to attempt Mr. Cozart Cupp to come in. That did not happen. She elected to sit back and allow her husband to proceed, although subsequent to her obtaining financing, she did in fact file a divorce action with local counsel. We believe, as was asked the question by the Chief Justice, that counseling, that maybe some counseling is necessary in the operation of the office, taking in Mr. Lavelle's extensive trial schedule. He has terminated the individual who had caused the problems at his office, albeit that was terminated approximately 2 days before the hearing. And prior to that time, Mr. Lavelle did not terminate her at the advice of myself. And it was indicated during the testimony that we wanted to make sure that she would be available and that we could have her there for all the hearings. So as a result, the determination was made by myself not to have her terminated until the completion of the hearing. The hearing, I must note, for this panel was approximately 11 and a half hours with only a three-quarters hours luncheon break that went the entire course of a day from 10 in the morning till 9:30. The
board apparently testified that that she had advised him of the progress of, I guess it was the Cup case. He disputed that, apparently. Is that right?
That is correct, Your Honor. Mr. Chief Judge, and I believe the board found Mr. Lavelle to be credible, as they stated in there, and that also they found in his testimony that he did not intentionally in any way misrepresent to the board or did not perform his duties in this case. As a result, we would ask that the recommendation of the board be implemented, being the 6 months suspension with the entire 6 month stay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Giannini. Ms. Brown, you've saved a little more than 3.5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I believe Mr. Giannini brings to the court's attention the fact that Mr. Lavelle has admitted on more than one occasion, most recently, I believe, in his brief to this court, in his closing argument to the board, certainly, that he was neglectful in his duty to assist and cooperate with the investigations of the Mahoning County Bar and the Disciplinary Council. The rule requires that an attorney or judge shall not neglect their duty to assist and cooperate. An investigation conducted by the Bar Association requires more from a respondent than merely showing up and giving his best guess as to what might have happened. If you look at the respondent's written answer and you read Rick Bush's testimony and his written synopsis of his investigation with Mr. Lavelle, the phrase, "I don't remember," is not in there. He could have shown up for his interview and said, "You know what, I really have no idea what happened here." He didn't do that. He came and he offered what he believed to be the actual facts. The only reason we know that those are not the facts is because the Mahoning County investigator went farther. He interviewed Christine Laurent, Mary Lou McDonald. He interviewed Rick Short. He interviewed Gloria Short. That's the reason we know what we know today, not based on what the respondent told him.
Counsel, I don't see much citation of other cases like this in terms of guidance for what the penalty ought to be. I have the impression from your argument that, and let me back up in terms of summing up, what we have here in terms of the board's findings would be one dissolution that was not filed and the client was told it was filed, right? And then failure to cooperate.
That it was, he neglected Gloria Short's case. That's the only finding by the board in count one.
And the dissolution was actually granted within 2 months or 3 months of when she was told her hearing was going to be on the case that wasn't filed.
She terminated respondent's representation in May.
So her harm is de minimis.
That's correct.
So taking someone out here, I guess I'm forming the impression that you want this lawyer to sit out in part because it is your strong feeling, based on what was presented, that he was not honest about who was actually responsible. He was not honest about his own failures. And so we'd really be taking him out. We'd have to find dishonesty on his part.
That's correct, John.
That he lied about that this was all the secretary.
He misrepresented what actually occurred, and he had a duty to tell the investigator that he didn't know or tell him the truth. In addition to that, he never interviewed his staff in any meaningful way until after their depositions were taken in the board case in March of 2004. It was not until that time that he heard Pamela Rodriguez say for the first time that she whited out dates and changed the dates. The respondent had never looked for the CUP file. He had never gone back to his documents to see exactly what was in that file. We produced the CUP file, as a matter of fact, as Joint Exhibit 1 at the hearing. None of those documents were in that file. So once again, just like the Gloria Short file, where are they? The respondent had a duty to have safeguards in place. He had a duty to get actively involved right as soon as he knew, which was in May of 2003, that there was a problem. Gloria Short filed a grievance, Lori Cozart filed a grievance. He didn't do any of that. As far as his duty with regard to the investigation, he was asked by Rick Bush on more than one occasion to get a statement from Pam Rodriguez, first to present her for an interview, and then because she was on maternity leave, to get a statement. He didn't do that either.
Okay. But you're really asking us to conclude that he was lying to the panel, and the panel didn't conclude that.
No, Your Honor, we are not asking that. He changed, in fact, the panel described his answers to the Bar Association as, quote, inaccurate. They were more than that. They were false answers. There was never a hearing scheduled for May 8th. He would never have told the Bar Association that if he had gone to the courthouse to try and find out what had happened. He didn't do that.
So we would be taking it out because you conclude he lied to the investigator.
That's correct.
Isn't the concern here, I would guess, of you and the Bar Association of Mahoning County is that he seems to have a pretty cavalier attitude about his responsibility to be forthright, at least forthright, with an investigation by disciplinary counsel or by the local certified grievance committee. And that, combined with his lack of supervision of his staff, which permitted the No Republic authority to be misused and so forth, that's, I would guess, I get from your brief that we need to, in our opinion, somehow need to again and again reiterate the message to the bar that these are serious matters, and that the client who had to go to another lawyer to get her case filed properly and heard, that in the end she didn't lose anything, but her impression of the bar is certainly not enhanced by that. And that's one of the things I see in your brief that we need to consider, and it certainly seems to be one of the things that the ABA model rules seem to suggest, that lawyers do have a responsibility to supervise, make reasonable efforts to supervise their staff.
That's correct. And file review, for example, to lead this court to believe that he was not going to file the Cupp case because the fee wasn't paid, Brian Cupp paid part of the fee. The respondent had conversations with Lori Cupp, Lori Cozart, on more than one occasion. At one point, she asked him to represent her, and then she was fed, if you will, false documents. Her impression of the bar was very similar to Gloria Short's impression, that she got false information, she was neglected, she was not responded to, and those are the reasons that Relator recommends an 18-month suspension with 12-month stay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.